We're still studying the post-diluvian period, or the time immediately following the flood. And in that time, we see the further development of God's plan respecting the redemption of mankind and the bringing of Jesus into the world. In our study last week, we looked at chapter 9, in particular of Genesis. We talked about Noah and his coming off of the ark. We talked about the fact that once again, man was placed into a world that was nearly free from sin. The world had been affected by sin, no doubt. It was not the world that existed in creation, which was absolutely free of sin. But God had purged the earth of wickedness and had placed on it a man, Noah, and his family, and given them the charge to be fruitful and multiply and fill the whole earth. And that's exactly what God had told Adam and Eve in the garden. And I think we should view that commandment in connection with the messianic hope. Because what did we learn in Genesis chapter 3? The Messiah would be the seed of whom? The seed of woman. So clearly, God intended to bring the Messiah into the world through procreation. Now, when we get further along in our studies, we'll see how that promise is better understood, because when we get to the book of Isaiah, this seed of the woman is going to be virgin born. So it's not going to be natural procreation. It's going to be a miraculous procreation. But nevertheless, the Messiah would be of the human family. And when the genealogy of Jesus is given in Luke chapter 3, he's pictured as the son of Mary, though he was thought to have been the son of Joseph. And I understand Luke's genealogy to be that of Mary, and so I put that "as was supposed" part in parenthesis. And so Mary, who was the son of Heli. And so you have the genealogy of Jesus in Luke from Mary all the way back to Adam, who was the Son of God. And it has to be that way, or else Jesus is not the Son of Man, because the lineage in Matthew's account takes us to Abraham and David, and certainly that's the legal lineage of Jesus in that chapter, establishing him as the heir of the throne of David. But that physical lineage to Abraham and David, as well as in Shealtiel and Zerubbabel that we studied, remember, when we were studying the minor prophets, that all crosses in both of those lineages. And so Jesus has a legal claim to the throne as a direct descendant of David, and he has a physical claim to the throne as a physical as well as legal descendant of Abraham, but his humanity is clearly established in Luke chapter 3, because we go all the way back to Adam. So he was the son of Adam, who was the son of God. And so Adam was the son of God by creation. And so Jesus is to be, the Christ, the Messiah, is to be a man. We learn that in Genesis 3. And so when Noah comes off the ark, God gives him that commandment: be fruitful, multiply, fill the whole earth. And that's messianic. Because if Noah doesn't do that, if Noah and his descendants don't do that, there won't be any Savior. And the reality is Noah needed the Messiah as much as anybody. See? And so, and all those who had died in faith before the flood, they still needed the Messiah. And so the redemptive plan had to move forward, And that's why when we get over here to the Tower of Babel in a few moments, or Babel as we like to call it, when we get over there to the Tower of Babel, we see the dividing of the earth, and I want you to see that as messianic. It's not just God's angry with those people. They weren't doing his will, you see. So Noah comes off the ark, and then you have his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and we mentioned them last week. And the order of record is not necessarily the order of occurrence or the order of birth, because in chapter 10 and verse 21, Japheth is called the elder. And in chapter 9 and verse 24, if that is a reference to Ham, he is called the youngest. This is what his youngest son did to him. Some understand that to be Canaan, but it's still that youngest lineage, it would seem. But so Japheth is the elder, and Ham is the younger, and Shem is the middle child. But it is Shem who gets the blessing. And I think that's the order of record is intended to emphasize his role in the messianic plan. And we should not be surprised that it doesn't always go to the firstborn. It went to Shem, who was the thirdborn. And then that record indicates, it seems to imply that those are all the firstborn sons of those begats. But it says afterwards he begat sons and daughters. So there's more than just the firstborn child. There are many children to these men. But the record indicates the significance. And we see that later with Ishmael and Isaac. And we see that with Jacob and Esau. And there you have two boys that were twins. And so they each had an equal claim on lineal descent. And even though a scarlet thread was tied around the hand of one, they're just born minutes apart. And Paul makes an argument on that in the book of Romans, that before either one of them had done anything, God made a determination about the blessing. He said that the older will serve the younger. That was the prophecy that was given to Rebekah. So it didn't necessarily have anything to do with the birth order. And the argument in Romans is it didn't have anything to do with what they themselves did. It was God's choice. And it was God's choice according to grace. And so that's the principle that's being taught. But anyway, we get to Shem. And he is the titular head of the family, and we see that it's from his name, Shem, that we get the word or term Semite. Shemite, Semite, which refers to the Hebrew people, the Jewish people. So the Hebrews are descended from Shem, and there are several generations between Shem and this next fella, whose name is Eber, or Eber. And it is from him that we get the name Hebrew. Notice there in chapter 10 and verse 21, I think his significance, and we'll talk some more about this in a minute, Shem also the father of the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth the elder, even to him were children born. So the children of Eber are these descendants of Shem, all right? And so the Hebrews are descended from Eber, and this is important in chapter 14 of Genesis in verse 13, because Abraham is called Abraham the Hebrew, right? So Shemites or Semites, Hebrews or Eberites, depending on how you pronounce the vowel. But the Hebrews, the Eberites. And his claim to fame seems to be there in chapter 10 and verse 25, when it says he had two children, Peleg and Joktan. And the name of the one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided. And you look up the word Peleg, and it's the word, it'll be defined divided or cleave, and sometimes earthquake. And so there's some debate in these verses about what's being spoken of here. And a little further down in verse 32, these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations. And by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. But that word divided is a different word. I looked it up. I just knew I couldn't be lucky enough to have the same word in both places. It's a different Hebrew word, which means to separate or to divide. But I don't think it changes the fact that what we're saying here is that Joktan, who's called little, he kind of goes off into obscurity, but Peleg, who's called earthquake or division, he was named that because in his days was the earth divided. And it seems to me that that earthquake is probably to be understood in connection with the Tower of Babel, because it was the Tower of Babel which was the occasion of the nations being divided. And so that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. If you can get a bit better one, you have it. But that's my understanding of what's being referred to here. I think there's more to it than just an earthquake. It's an earthquake that was associated with the division of the earth. Well, how was the earth divided? How did the earth cleave in the days of Eber when Peleg was born? Well, they were scattered. And that's how that chapter or that genealogy ends. As these are the nations. The whole point of this reckoning here in chapter 10 is to establish the nations of the earth. Now, let's enhance that a little bit and go over here to jump on ahead there to chapter 11 and read the narrative about Babel, and we'll make some more comments and observations. So the whole earth was one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they sojourned from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go, let us build a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restricted from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. All right, now let's go back and remember a little bit there at the end of chapter 3. So in chapter 3, we were speaking a moment ago about the promise that God gave to Adam and Eve that involved Messiah. And that's verse 15 right in there. And then the chapter goes down to the end. And what happened at the end of chapter 3? Well, God said, we need to take man out of the garden. Why? Because if we don't, he's going to stretch forth his hand and live. If he has access to the tree of life in his spiritual state, which was of sin, he'd live forever as a sinner. And that was contrary to God's plan. The only way we know that or understand that is because God intended to use death to destroy death. And that's Hebrews chapter 2. So only the God of heaven could devise a plan in which what is the greatest fear of mankind and the greatest strength of Satan, the fear of death, they lived all their lifetime subject to bondage. Why? Because they feared death, Hebrews 2 says. Why do people live like they do, not believing in God? Well, they know they're going to die. I mean, that's the whole point of the book of Ecclesiastes, is life under the sun is futile. And the reason it's futile is because men are living without God. Now, if there was no God, it would make sense to live fast, die young, or make a pretty corpse. But if there is a God, then what Solomon says is, remember this, that everything you do is going to be brought into judgment. And so therefore, it is the whole duty of man to fear God and keep his commandments. And that's the only way that makes any sense, is that there's going to be an ultimate judgment in which we appear before God and give an account of ourselves. And that's what is in view in Genesis chapter 3. Now granted, we're at the beginning of the story and we're reading the book backwards, but nevertheless, that's the reality. And God said, no, I'm not going to let him have access to the tree of life lest he put forth his hand and live forever as a sinner. And so there in Genesis 3, you have God forcing man out into the world to fulfill that commandment. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the whole earth, even though it was going to be in pain and sorrow and the sweat of their brow. Now God says, I'm not going to curse the earth anymore. Whatever the full extent of the curse is, I don't know. The Bible doesn't reveal. But nevertheless, he says, I'm not going to curse the earth anymore. Noah, get off the boat and fill the earth. See, God's plan is still moving forward. And so when we talk about the flood, let me tell you something. This is why the devil opposes all of this stuff. This is why people make fun of the flood, because if the flood actually happened, universal flood in which all mankind drowned, everything that had the breath of life in its nostrils perished. If that's the truth, we are answerable to God. It's not because it doesn't make sense. It's because it makes sense. And they don't believe it. They don't want to believe it. Men want to go to bed every night and wake up every day thinking, well, I'm just going to do all I can do and enjoy life to its fullest. And I, when I'm dead, I'm like Rover, I'm dead all over. People wouldn't live like they do if they really believed. They're going to meet God in judgment. And so that's why they make fun of the flood. That's, you know, my mother-in-law asked us, you don't really believe that story about a boat and all those animals? Yes, I do. I really do. And I believe the one about the whale. And I believe the one about the resurrection. See, I believe them all. But people don't want to believe that, so they make fun of this. And they don't see the connection that in everything God is doing, this is why I say the book is about Jesus. The Bible is about God bringing Christ into the world. And so everything God's been doing from page one of this book is so he could have a people for his own possession. And before he ever spoke light into existence, God had chosen Jesus to be the Savior of the world. You need to remember that. That the creation follows God's choice of the Messiah. Because Jesus was the Lamb slain from before the foundation of the world. And so Noah, get off the boat and go have a family. Procreate, fill the earth. Your sons do the same. Fear God, keep His commandments. Worship me and live. And so they do that for a while. I don't know the exact number of generations. I didn't count them again this morning, but from Shem to Eber, and then from Eber to Terah. You can count them. But from Noah to Eber, let's just look there. So Shem begat Arphaxad, and Arphaxad begat Selah. So that's two. And Selah begat Eber. So that's three. So four generations if you count Shem. Because Shem is the first generation after Noah. So you got four generations, and the earth is divided. And so we're back on schedule. But for a while, and so there in chapter 11, it says they came from the east and settled in Babylon. So wherever Mount Ararat is, and they came off the boat and they were moving, and they came back down into the Mesopotamian valleys and settled in Babylon. And it's generally thought that Mount Ararat in Turkey is the place. And so that makes sense, east. Yeah. So they came back and settled in the region between the rivers. And what did they say? Let's make brick. Burn them thoroughly. And they had brick and mortar. And they said, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. Now, I don't know that they really thought they were going to build a tower all the way up to God. But I do think they thought they were going to build them a place that they would not be removed from, which seems to imply there might have been other human beings somewhere else that had settled, and they were concerned about it. But this seems to be the predominant group anyway. It's the one that God's concerned about. And so, because who's going to come from this area? Who's going to be coming from this general area where Babel is built?
Abraham,
Ur of Chaldees. So we've got all this in view, you see. Use your Bible knowledge, read backwards. That's the only way we're going to understand some of this, is reading backwards. And so let's build it so we won't be scattered abroad. And the Lord came down to see, and that's an anthropomorphism. But we see the Lord came to Abraham in the plains of Mamre, and that the other two angels went down to Sodom and Gomorrah to see if the cry thereof was altogether what it seemed to be. And I don't think God doubted it. He was just giving one more chance, making one more opportunity to save Lot, who'd been saved and saved and saved. And so it isn't that God had to make a trip to Babel to see. That's the point I'm making. It's an anthropomorphism. And so let's see the tower and the city which the children are building. Children of men, and the word men there is Adam. You know, so the children of Adam, what they're building. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they all have one language. And this they begin to do, and nothing will be restrained from them. Now, with Adam and Eve, lest they put forth their hand and live forever. Now here, nothing will be restrained from them. In other words, this is not what I want. And they'll continue here. They'll build and they'll become strong. And remember what we had before the flood. We had tyrants who built these cities. And so what's God concerned about it. He's concerned that the same thing that's already happened is going to happen again. And God has said, but I'm not going to destroy the world again with a flood. But God didn't say he wasn't going to do anything and he was going to let man run the show. He didn't say that either, did he? And so God intervenes here to accomplish his purpose, and he confuses the language. And this is a great story because, see, all these people all of a sudden don't speak Texan anymore. They speak other languages. And what languages, I don't know. But we have an indication in anthropology and sociology, those studies that are associated with that, that there are common links among languages and there are common gene pools and so on and so forth, and that we all share something in common as far as our humanity is concerned. We all have the same genes, though some of us are from Viking stock. I found out not so long ago that I'm a Viking. Don't I look like one? And so I'm a Viking. And I'm also a Scotsman. And so they have these different gene pools, but I know people who are French extraction and people who are German extraction, and they may have a little Viking in them, but not necessarily. And so all this gets mixed up back along the way, and then we get over into Asia, and we've got all those different people that are of Asian extraction, and we get down into Africa, and we've got all those different people that are of African extraction, and then we try to explain what are the Indians, the American Indians, the Native American, I guess I should say. What's their extraction? Is something, well, it's Asian. And so we have all these different races and gene pools. And someone says, how do you explain all that? I explain all that in the beginning. God created the heavens and the earth. And on the sixth day, he made man and he brought the woman unto her. In the eternal wisdom of God, there was sufficient gene pool in Adam for it all. I mean, there's just so many chromosomes that humanity has, and just chromosomes, period. And they get all mixed up, and they have these different combinations that provide for skin color and hair color and eye color. And when you isolate those in groups, which is what God does here, he divides the earth, he scatters the people. And so some go to Africa, some go to Europe, some go to Asia, some stay right there in the middle of the Middle East, and they intermarry and they expand and their genes are combined and recombined. And then just like with those finches down in the Galapagos Islands, they're all the same finch, but on one island they're one way and on the other island they're another way because they've been separated. And they haven't crossed. And after a while, kinds, because of that gene pool, they eventually breed themselves to the point that they can't cross anymore. And so you have horses that can cross with donkeys, and you get a mule, which is generally sterile. And so you breed down to the end. And you guys who've bred cattle, you know, you got to keep up with that, or what happens? You end up losing your breed. And one of the things that we're fighting over in Texas right now is all these Bradford pears that everybody planted because they have gorgeous white flowers and beautiful red leaves in the fall. And they were supposed to be sterile. But what'd they do? Well, they don't breed with one another, but they breed with the wild pears and the native pears that we've had in this country for generations. And now we've got a corrupted pear tree that's taken over East Texas. And so it's an invasive species. And so we don't know everything that God knows about things, do we? And so that's my point. God put all of that in there to start. And he knew what he wanted. And that's where I want us to read now. Turn over to Acts chapter 17, because this is this is why I'm glad Lance said something about this study, because I haven't done it in a while. And I'm learning things. And this time, Lance, on the way through, I got a new insight into Acts 17 there in verse 26 when Paul says that God hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. God had this in his plan. And when did he do this? When did he scatter them? When did he set them where he wanted them to go? When he divided the earth. And so we need to see the division of the earth in a messianic context. That God was fulfilling his plan. Another passage that comes to mind here is in the book of Deuteronomy. I need to turn a page for my notes. And let's see here. Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter, verses 7 through 9. This is a passage. I've read it many times, but it didn't jump out at me till I was running some references and doing some other study, and then I remembered this passage, and it just became so clear. Deuteronomy 32, verse 7. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. This is Moses talking now. And Moses has been writing the five books of Moses. And he's been reading the five books of Moses to Israel. And they have been listening to that for 40 years in the wilderness, hopefully. And so he says, remember the days of old. Well, how could they remember them? Because God had told them about them. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you. When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance. When did God divide to the nations their inheritance? In Genesis chapter 10, when God divided the nations or the earth. When he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. Now get that. He set the bounds, the boundaries of the nations, the Gentiles, according to what? The number of the children of Israel. What's he talking about? He's talking about the Messianic plan. This is the passage that Paul is quoting in Acts chapter 17. And he's clearly getting ready to preach about Jesus, isn't he, in Acts 17, if you remember that passage. He starts out talking about the God they don't know, and he says, let me tell you about this God, what this God did. This God had a plan from before the foundation of the world, which involved all of us being where we are today in order for him to complete his plan with respect to Jesus. And so he set the boundaries of the nations so that Israel could exist as a people through whom Christ would come. And if you look at a map of the world, you know, we think that the center of the world is Washington, D.C. The Russians think it's Moscow. The Chinese think it's Beijing. And if you spread the world out and you put the star at your place, it is the center of the world. But you spread that map out and you put the center of the world at Jerusalem, and all the nations are around it. And Genesis chapter 9 had said that Israel, or Shem, would come and displace whom? The Canaanites, the descendants of Ham, who were in Canaan, and that they would ultimately share in the promise, but that the Japhethites would dwell in the tents of Shem. And so this whole plan. And this is what Paul's talking about there in Acts chapter 17. This whole plan of God bringing Christ into the world, it was foreseen and fixed before the foundation of the world. And from the very first verse of the Bible, we are seeing God work that out. And so here in chapters 10 and 11, we have this division of the nations according to this eternal purpose of God. And I'll just give you another passage so you can write it there in the margin to help you remember this idea. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 10 and 11. Paul says, to the intent that now, under principalities and powers and heavenly places, and he's talking about the angels who desire to look into these things, and I'll talk about that tonight in the lesson, but to the intent that now, unto the principalities and powers and heavenly places, might be known by the church the manifold or many-faceted wisdom of God, according to the eternal purpose which he purposed in or through Christ Jesus our Lord. So everything God is doing according to his eternal purpose, he's doing in or through or by, and in some instances we could say for, because in Colossians chapter 1, the heavens and the earth were created for him. All right. So all of this has to do with Jesus. Now, Daniel recognized this in Daniel 4 when he tried to explain to Nebuchadnezzar. He said, look, Nebuchadnezzar, you're here because God put you here. And God's going to take you down until you learn that the eternal God rules where? In the kingdoms of men. So all these nations are where they are because that's where God wanted them to be, in the accomplishment of his eternal purpose. Another passage, Psalm 103 and verse 19, and that's a good one to remember on this point. Psalm 103, verse 19, the Lord hath prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over all. So, don't ever think that God is not in control. And don't ever think that there is no plan. Now, that doesn't mean we're all foreordained from before the foundation of the world and that we don't have free will. That's not it at all. But God has a plan, and that plan has been put in place, and that plan centers in Jesus, and you and I have the gospel to bring us to Christ. All right, that's a good place to stop. Next week, we'll take up with I'll come out of chapter 11 into chapter 12, and we'll talk about the call of Abraham. But now this next section is a big section. It goes from Genesis chapter 12 all the way to the end of the book of Genesis. So if you haven't already read all of Genesis, you need to start reading it and get the text refamiliarized in your mind.